Thank you very much. And thank all of you for coming today. So as Rishi mentioned, my prior work was with girls who had been child soldiers. And through that work, I became very interested in the role of anger as a reintegration barrier. The young women that I worked with reported that anger was the largest obstacle to their successful reintegration into their communities. And so returning back to this country in the wake of 9/11 and the ongoing wars here, I thought it was important to look at what might be going on with our population of veterans and current service members. So this work formed part of my dissertation research at UC Berkeley. And today I'll go over a little bit of the background to this study, the research questions and approach that I used, and some of the implications of our findings. So obviously the US military is a very different population than girls who are child soldiers in West Africa, but it's also a very different population than it was, say, 30 years ago. Our current service members experience a very different kind of conflict, longer and multiple deployments, and most importantly to me, coming from my work with young women who had been child soldiers, I was interested in the increasing role of women in the armed services in general, but also in situations of combat. We have about 15% of fighting forces are women today. So based on the research I had done previously and then obviously looking at the literature, my hypothesis from working with these young women and then looking at current service members and veterans was that wartime trauma alters the biological and neurological processing of threat and anger responses. This then makes anger more difficult to moderate, modulate, and control, leading to anger problems that disrupt relationships with family, friends, employers, and community, thereby threatening successful reintegration. And that this poor reintegration has long-term social, economic, and public health consequences. So research with specialized groups of veterans suggests that anger is an important problem facing veterans, and it's often associated with PTSD. Given the high prevalence of PTSD among recent veterans, this seems like a very important thing to look at. We just had a report come out from the VA last month showing that 30% of, I think it was 33% actually, of Iraq and Afghanistan veterans had been given a provisional diagnosis, at least, of PTSD out of all of those who had been seen within the VA or vet center systems. Most research on anger and violence in veterans, however, has been done with Vietnam veterans and often long after the wartime exposures and mostly in treatment-seeking populations. There have been a few national surveys that have asked questions about anger, and it looks like about half of veterans do report problems with anger. But we don't know how common anger problems are among current service members. There's no information about how anger problems may impact reintegration for new veterans. And we don't know whether there are gender differences between men's and women's experiences of anger problems and how they may impact reintegration. So I took a mixed methods approach, which seems appropriate given the lack of prior knowledge that we had about this topic. So I conducted two studies. One was a quantitative study and one was a qualitative study. And I'll be presenting on some findings from both of those, although given the short time frame of the presentation, there's plenty more. So if you're curious, please do talk to me. So in the quantitative study, I was aiming to estimate the scope and magnitude of anger problems, ascertain which risk factors might be most important for anger problems, and to quantitatively assess the gender differences. Then with the qualitative study, I was aiming to understand more about the context and meaning and depth of these anger problems, to understand the impact of anger problems on service members' lives, and again, to qualitatively assess some of the gender differences. So I'll go first over the quantitative study. I aim to estimate the prevalence of anger in current service members, and I thought this was important to use a study that looked at current service members so we could follow them up over time and look at then how things might change when they became veterans, but also to see whether these problems were arising while they were current service members. So I was estimating the association between anger and PTSD in current service members and doing that both by men and women, but also we had a unique opportunity in these data to look at PTSD associated with civilian traumas as well as deployment-related traumas. And so this was an unusual contribution of the study. We used a nationally representative study of Reserve and National Guard service members, and I used data from Wave 2, which had about 1,300 participants, and it's Sandra Galea and Robert Ursano are the PIs on this study. So the key constructs are some validated scales that have been used in veteran populations, the Dimension of Anger scale, which is a short scale as opposed to some of the longer instruments like the STAXI, which takes a long time. And we use the PTSD checklist. We use the civilian version. And we asked current service members both about civilian and deployment-related traumas. So if they said that they had civilian traumas, they were given the PTSD checklist for those and then separately administered it a second time if they also endorsed deployment-related traumas. So for some service members, we had two measures of PTSD, and for others, we had one, and others, just none. And then, of course, we use self-report and some databases for demographic and military history. And we found that even in this population, you'll see there's a very low prevalence of PTSD, 5.8% for men, 5.4% for women. There were very high prevalence of self-reported anger problems. And the prevalence of anger and PTSD are quite similar between men and women. And as I said before, the prevalence of anger is actually very similar to reports in the current veteran population. Here, these models adjust for demographic characteristics and looking at the prevalence of anger by PTSD type. And you'll see that anger is associated with PTSD related to any type of trauma. However, anger is more prevalent in those with deployment-related PTSD than civilian-related PTSD, and is more prevalent among those with both types of PTSD than deployment-related PTSD alone. This table represents that for every standard deviation increase in PTSD symptom severity, there is an increase in the prevalence of anger problems. For example, among women with PTSD symptoms related to deployment traumas, there is a 50% increase in the prevalence of anger for each increasing level of symptom severity. We restricted each of these analyses to those without the other kind of PTSD. So in looking at deployment-related PTSD symptom severity, it's only among those who don't also have civilian PTSD. You can see that the increase in the prevalence of anger is associated it's higher among women than among men, and higher for deployment-related PTSD in both groups than for civilian PTSD. So overall, this study was the first to examine the association between anger and PTSD from both civilian and deployment-related traumas. It's the first to look at the association between anger and PTSD in women service members, and the first population-based study that we are aware of to look at anger and PTSD in current service members. One of the limitations, however, was that we did not have that many women. The sample did not oversample for women, and so some of our estimates have pretty low precision among the women. So turning now to the qualitative study, and recall in this study we aim to ascertain how anger impacts reintegration, and we are particularly looking at the social domains around family, friends, work and school, and community. And for this study, I conducted 24 in-depth interviews with recently separated Bay Area veterans, and we had 17 men and 7 women. And these veterans were purposefully recruited, so as we had a somewhat diverse group and representatives from every branch of service. We asked open-ended questions inquiring about reintegration experiences in the social domains I mentioned in the previous slide. And then we analyzed these data for central themes to explore meaning and examine the relationships between these themes. And our results showed that anger did negatively impact veterans' lives. Anger disrupted veterans' abilities to sustain and maintain intimate relationships and to enjoy healthy relationships with family and friends. Some veterans, in fact, chose not to form friendships in order to avoid social situations where they might become angry. Others found that friends did not want to be with them because of their anger problems. Anger impacted veterans' abilities to maintain a job or to feel part of school environments, and in some cases, the anger did lead to veterans losing a job or quitting school. Veterans themselves also chose to set limits on their ability to connect socially with others, for example, sitting on their own in public spaces, so going to a bar but sitting at a table all by yourself, or to choose a line of work with less social interaction. So there were a couple of veterans who had chosen to go into laboratory sciences because they thought they wouldn't have to interact with others as much. Even when these anger outbursts were avoided, the fear of the inability to successfully manage anger continued to prevent veterans from taking full part in civilian life and from forming rich social environments. And the gender differences were quite interesting. We found that the language that women veterans used to describe people's perception of their anger was highly gendered and quite different from the language that male veterans used. So, for example, one woman veteran reported that her mother had said that it was hard to endure her, that her friends called her bitchy, and that a boyfriend had called her hard to handle. These epithets are highly gendered, reflecting gendered socialization that makes anger less acceptable an emotion for women than for men. In contrast, one man reported after getting into a fight that his mother had been appreciative that he would stick up for her, even though she had also said, please don't get arrested on our family vacation. And these are some quotes from participants that I wanted to share with you. So one woman veteran said, now I have serious anger management issues, and I wasn't like that before. My family, they were used to me being this quiet, meek, nice person. When I came back, I was still kind of that, but I would have these angry outbursts over the smallest little thing. A young male veteran reported, I had a job with a solar company and I got fired for anger issues. I had disclosed to them that I had PTSD before they hired me, and they said they were fine with it. And then I got angry at another employee and it cost me my job. And then an older male veteran who had been career military said, sometimes when I get angry, I tell my wife, we're leaving right now and you're driving. So that's an example of a man who had chosen to avoid social situations because of being afraid of getting angry. So the combined results from both the qualitative and the quantitative study, we saw that service members and veterans face a high burden of anger, which can result in strained relationships and difficulty feeling connected. That anger is associated with PTSD, but it also represents a significant burden independently from PTSD. And that anger is a substantial problem among both men and women, but gendered stereotypes about anger have an impact on reintegration, and we hypothesize it might actually make it more difficult for women than for men. So these findings add to literature demonstrating that anger is a common problem for military service members and veterans, especially those who have been exposed to combat-related trauma. It focuses our attention on the burden of anger. This research challenges gendered assumptions about anger, which often suggest that men experience more anger problems than women. And PTSD is, as we expected, the biggest predictor, or I might say the strongest predictor, of problems with anger. And there are intervention implications as well. I think, firstly, interventions aimed at reducing anger problems should begin before separation, so they should work first with current service members. Interventions for PTSD should explicitly include anger management, and I know the VA has done a pretty good job in including anger management in some of their programming. But as civilian practitioners as well, we might want to consider that because not all service members do get their care through the VA system. And in terms of research, I think longitudinal follow-up is important to understand the trajectories of anger for service members. Some of the qualitative findings indicated that service members had an easier time as they did get used to their experiences in civilian life, but it would be important to follow this up over time and to look at this. And then thinking back to that hypothesis that I had set out, we can envision interventions at every layer. So, of course, the first would be to end war and wartime traumas, which I think would be take a good step towards ending anger problems among veterans and service members. And then second, through medication or other treatment, we could intervene on the biological and neurological processing of threat and anger responses and increase people's experiences with anger modulation. And third, to intervene in communities with service members and their families and those who have a stake in their success, so for example at schools and in the workplace, to reduce the negative sequelae and improve reintegration outcomes. I wanted to close somewhat on a personal note, which is that as a non-military connected person doing this research, one of the things that really struck me was when I did the qualitative research, veterans really did experience a lot of difficulty in their reintegration. And for them, finding kind of visible sources of support really made a difference. So just saying thank you to somebody in a uniform or to have a show of support through a yellow ribbon or a support sign saying we support the troops actually really did make a difference and made reintegration easier. So I'd encourage all of us to think about that. And so it's something very little that we can do that can really make a difference in people's lives. So in closing, I just wanted to acknowledge the study participants and my co-researchers and some of the community partners who helped us both in terms of some formative research and then also connecting us to veterans who we could do interviews with. And the last two are our funding supports, and we always want to thank them. So thank you very much.